I asked you this morning, have you ever heard the words or the question, you need an attitude adjustment? I am going to assume, whether you answer yes or no to that question inside of your head, that there probably has been a time or two that you might have been tangled up with what we would commonly say is a bad attitude. The question we have before us this morning, though, is how often do we spend our time in that bad attitude, moping around or angry at the world? Let me tell you a little story about a grandpa and his grandchildren. Every day, late in the afternoon, grandpa would get sleepy and take a nap. I know this is Bob Wagner to the T, right? Every time you're with your grandchildren? Okay, exactly, right. So this is actually a true story about grandchildren, and I'm trying to keep Bob Wagner awake as I'm preaching. Okay, the grandchildren decided that it would be really funny, right, if they put Limburger cheese, which if you know anything about Limburger, it's quite... Yes. And so they thought it would be really funny if they put some of that cheese on his mustache while he was sleeping. So soon after the application of the cheese, the grandpa woke up saying, "This room stinks," which of course you can hear the giggle, 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 giggle in the background, right? And then grandpa headed into the kitchen and yelled out, "This kitchen stinks too." And he decided to walk outdoors for a breath of fresh air. But much to Grandpa's surprise, the open air brought no relief. And he proclaimed, "The whole world stinks." And the grandchildren were giggling as they heard their grandpa say out loud the words that described his attitude. This really isn't Bob Wagner. All the time. We like to pick on grumpy old men, but the truth is that most of the grumpiness each of us feels is like that Limburger cheese on the mustache right under each of our noses. If we go around thinking that everything around us stinks, then it might not really be the world as much as it might be our own attitude that stinks. Someone rightly said that attitude, not aptitude, determines one's altitude in life. In my research, I came across a four-point approach for Christians to double check in case you might need your own attitude adjustment. So I'm going to help us to take this little quiz and formula. First, you need to ask, what is your attitude towards others? If we look at our Bible passage from today, Paul gives us insight as to what our attitude should not be. He says that lying to each other might be the way to destructive relationship patterns. Well, that sounds kind of obvious, right? And obviously, if we lie to one another, then people wouldn't trust anything we said, right? Or at least most of it. And I think we need to realize that this does not mean we get a free pass, that we have to tell the truth all the time in a very harmful or hurtful way, because there's also a part of the Bible that says, speak the truth in love. But it also means that we have to be very real in our communication with one another. This passage says we should refrain, though, from speaking pleasantries all the time, too. Because you know that person that always says, "Hi, everything's going really well. You know what?" You don't like to be around them either. So, I mean, basically, you want to be a person that people like to be around. One way we do that is that we don't harbor anger towards another person where we spend all of our days carrying around resentment and hatred. We should keep from taking from others what is theirs. In other words, thou shalt not steal. That might be a good way to maintain healthy relationships. For what belongs to another person is theirs and not ours. You can borrow it or maybe even have it be shared with you, but you do not steal it. And your mouth in a regular pattern should not speak against others, but rather in words should be lifting up and helping others. Simply put, if we have a right attitude towards others, then peace will be in our own heart. We can leave behind hatred and ill will and selfish behavior and instead be compassionate, forgiving, and loving. As it says in Philippians 2, We need to have an attitude of humility like Jesus had. Being humble can defeat anything negative around us. Secondly, number two in our little checkpoint list, is we are supposed to ask, what is our attitude about ourselves? In Scripture, we learn that we should not put ourselves down. We are made in the image of God, and He has given us gifts and has promised, if we seek Him, that He will be with us in all things. It is not spiritually healthy to put yourself down. That is what we call false humility. And I must say this, because I tend sometimes to be a little bit of a perfectionist, but perfectionists can actually be self-abasing. That's a big phrase. But it means that they're harmful to themselves. They have a tendency to beat themselves up whenever they make any kind of mistake, and it will push you further into self-absorption about the negativity rather than convincing yourself that maybe next time you could learn and grow from that mistake and be better in the future. We need to have confidence that God is God and He works through us even if we are a broken human being. For our God is a God who forgives, has plans for us, and will use us for His glory if we have a right mind and heart towards His teachings. Now, I don't want to, you know, sound like I'm lecturing here, but it's hard sometimes to do not the opposite of self-abasing, right? To think too highly of oneself. Do you know anybody like that? Maybe they have a really big head, right? Sometimes they can't get through the door because it's so big. Right? So the opposite is we have to keep ourselves in check, that we also don't assume too much of ourselves. As it says in Romans 12, "For by the grace given me I say to you, do not think of yourselves more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the measure of faith God has given you." We need, therefore, to have what is called godly confidence. Third, we need to ask ourselves, what is our attitude towards God? King Solomon had an attitude problem. I don't know if you read anything about King Solomon. He's in the Old Testament. He had a time when he decided he was going to no longer be devoted to God. His attitude and his devotion had changed. At the root of Solomon's change was that he believed he didn't need God anymore, and that he was angry with Him to a certain degree. For God had encouraged through His word and command that it was not healthy to yoke yourself or marry somebody who is not of your same faith. Now, I know this is a certain different challenge that we face in our day today, but back then, Solomon married, I don't even want to tell you the numbers, an exorbitant amount of people. And what happened is a lot of his wives were not of God, and they discouraged him from a right worship and devotion to the true God for which he used to love and worship. And so what we can learn from Solomon is that to be wise, we have to seek out God's wisdom, not our own. And that will help us in the long run not to be angry with God for the mistakes that we make or for what happens in the world around us. Eventually, Solomon, who was once directed by wisdom, changed his attitude and became his own problem. We will meet other people like that around us, where perhaps maybe people have fallen away from God. But we hope that when we model for others our sincere devotion to God, that it could be contagious, and that other people might learn from us and grow from us and follow and ask us why we do what we do. One day the telephone rang in the preacher's office of the Washington Church, which President Franklin Roosevelt was attending at the time. An eager voice inquired, "Tell me, do you expect the president to be in church this Sunday?" "That," the preacher explained patiently, "I cannot promise. But we expect God to be there, and we fancy that will be incentive enough for a reasonably large attendance. Knowing that the Lord wants to meet with us on a daily basis, and especially in the act of worship on Sunday, should be enough motivation for each of us to seek out a church. A right attitude towards God is found in what we call the hunger of righteousness. As I shared with the children in our children's time, we need to look at the world a little differently than what the world promises us. We need to realize that what brings us happiness, what brings us fulfillment, what brings us a better attitude is not what the world promises. God tells us that we are like deer standing by a living stream of water, panting and longing for him, and we will be thirsty until we rest in him. The last question we need to ask is, since all of us need to at one point or another, is now that you've done those first three questions, do you need an attitude adjustment? I'm going to assume, just for the sake of the sermon, that you might. If so, I'm going to share a story. Yesterday, a friend of mine on Facebook was talking about how her cousin Julie had recently passed away and that all of the family had gone to the service. After they had returned home and the children were getting ready for bed, my friend was meeting with her oldest daughter for prayer time. Anna asked her mom before the prayer began, "Hey, Mom, are you okay?" And my friend answered her daughter by saying, "Well, I would say that I'm not okay. I'm more reflective, because I think in losing my cousin Julie, I've realized how lately I have not focused as much on my blessings as much on what I don't have." And here's the key part of the story. Her daughter said in response, "Mom, I have been hoping and praying that you would do that for a really long time." How do we have a God attitude, or as some would say, a positive attitude? For life is not always easy. It comes with many challenges and obstacles. The Bible encourages us, though, to look for the good in things. As I shared with the children in the children's time, as a bee buzzes along in the garden of flowers and seems happy there, the bee is happy with what is right in front of him or her. Sometimes we think it's greener on the other side, but in so doing, like our little daughter Anna might say to us, "I would hope and pray that you would realize what you have right here." You ever meet one of those people who, no matter what was going on, they were always able to see the positive side of things, always able to look on the bright side? They're one of those people that has the glass half full. Have you ever met somebody like that? Sometimes they're annoying to be around. As I talked about, you can be always positive and that doesn't seem real, right? But sometimes when you're down and when you need a little encouragement, it's wonderful to be around an optimistic person. Someone who can guide you to the fact that maybe you've been focusing a little bit by looking down instead of by looking up. So another way we can become more like God is to spend time around God-like people, to encourage your health and your spiritual wealth by surrounding yourself with those who have an optimistic situation. I'm going to tell the last story I'll close with. Chuck Swindoll, who was a big-time pastor in California and has written a lot of books, wrote the following about himself. He said, "Words can never adequately convey the incredible impact of our attitude towards life. The longer I live," Swindoll says, "the more convinced I become that life is 10% what happens to us and 90% how we respond. I believe the single most significant decision I can make on a day-to-day basis," Swindoll says, "is my choice of attitude. It is more important than my past, my education, my bankroll, my success or failure, my fame or pain, what other people think of me or say about me, my circumstances or my position. Attitude keeps me going, or it can cripple my progress. It alone fuels my fire or assaults my hope. When my attitude is right," Swindoll says, "there is no barrier too high, no valley too deep, no dream too extreme, and no challenge too great." So let's choose this morning to have a God attitude. Amen.
As we prepare for our last hymn, What a Friend We Have in Jesus, let's just do the first verse and the chorus.